Mickey Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this sexy episode of You Bet Your Life, entitled Sky.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't mention this to a soul, but the secret word tonight is sky, S-K-Y.
Really?
You bet your life! Elgin America, creator of America's most beautiful compact, smartest cigarette cases, magic action lighters, finest dresser sets, presents Groucho Marx in the Elgin American show, You'll Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here's that sterling Elgin American, the one, the only...
Groucho Marx!
When did he get out? Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx! Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman, who's first to try and take it away from me?
Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected the father of a bride and the mother of a groom. And here they are, Mrs. Faye Levine and Mr. Martin McHugh. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for Elgin American Compact, folks. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins a 16mm Apollo Sound movie projector instantly. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mr. Martin McHugh, huh?
That's right.
You're the father of the bride, huh? How do you feel?
I have felt peppier.
Why don't you get some sleep?
I will when the wedding's over.
Aren't you married?
Why? My daughter's getting married.
Mm. You mean your daughter's wedding, huh?
That's right.
You're the mother of the groom, eh, Mr. B?
Yeah.
When is your son going to be bridled? I mean married, huh?
February,
huh? How long have you known Mr. McHugh?
I don't know Mr. McHugh.
Then I don't think you two should get married.
We're not.
Mrs. Levine, who just is getting married?
My son.
Your
and
son?
And his daughter.
To each other?
No, not to each other.
Why not? Why aren't they?
They don't know each other.
They don't know each other.
No.
What better reason do you want for getting married? Let's get better acquainted. But how long have you been married, Mr. McHugh? Huh?
About 22 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, how'd you meet your wife?
Well, I met her in a boarding house in St. Louis. Saw her coming down the steps one morning as I was about to eat breakfast, and that finished me for the breakfast. I didn't eat any.
You were eating breakfast on the steps?
I started. No, at the table. But I saw her coming down the steps.
What were you eating? Do you remember?
Well, I started to drink some coffee.
Mm-hmm. And that was grounds for marriage?
That right there, yes. I was hooked right there.
How did you meet your husband, Mrs. Levine? Huh?
Well, I came from London to Toronto, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband had been living at my sister's 6 weeks.
Uh-huh. And?
Well, it looked like something that I thought would be just right.
For your sister?
No, my sister.
Your sister didn't care for him?
Well, she was married.
Answer my question, Mrs. Levine.
She liked him.
Well, will your son and his wife live with you or with her folks?
Well, they're going to live on their own.
They're going to live on their own what, huh?
They're
going to live by themselves, huh? Why don't they live together? What sort of work does your husband do?
Well, he has the Carlo cleaners.
The Carlo cleaners?
Mm-hmm.
And what is your occupation, Mr. McHugh?
I sell surgical instruments and hospital supplies for the ASLO company.
Anything exciting ever happened on your job that you'd care to relate, Mr. McHugh?
Well, something happened just a couple of weeks ago that I thought was quite funny.
You did, huh?
A customer called up, a woman customer, and she immediately complained about receiving a piece of equipment that was damaged. And finally she said, well, I can't hear you, talk louder. And I did, I talked much louder. And finally she said she couldn't hear me again, and then there was a lull in the conversation. The next thing I heard, she said, I'm sorry, but I'll have to call you back. My battery went out.
Well, Did she say who it went out with? Now, Mr. McHugh, as the father of the bride, tell me, are you the big wheel at the wedding?
Well, I think I am. I'm supposed to be.
In what way?
Well, I pay all the bills.
How much is the wedding going to set you back, approximately?
Oh, I'd say roughly in the neighborhood of $2,000.
That's a fairly rough neighborhood, isn't it? Aside from that little $2,000 item, Mr. McHugh, what are some of your other duties connected with the wedding?
Well, I've got to give the bride away and act as host.
$2,000 giveaway, huh? I hope the FCC doesn't stop the music. Is that all you do at the wedding, just give away the bride?
No, I act as host and see that everybody's happy and gets enough to eat and drink.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look like a pretty genial host, Mr. McHugh. So all the guests are going to be very happy there.
Well, we hope so.
I hope so, too. And if your daughter is half as cute as you are, I think it's going to be... Has the swag started rolling in yet? You know, the wedding stuff?
Well, a few things have.
Uh-huh. You know why everybody sends presents to the bride, don't you? The only chance they have of getting rid of some of the junk that they got on their wedding, huh?
Groucho.
Yeah, yes, George?
I'd like to make a suggestion to Mr. McHugh.
Well, you go right ahead, George.
All right, you know, it's
customary. Nobody makes finer suggestions than you do, George.
Mr. McHugh, you know, it's customary for the bride to give nice remembrances to her bridesmaids. And compacts, pearls, and cigarette cases by Elgin American are certainly wonderful gifts at weddings everywhere.
Thank you, George. I now pronounce you Elgin American. And speaking of gifts, what are you going to give Mrs. Levine here?
Well, Elgin American's beautiful dresser set, finished in jeweler's bronze that looks like gold. A perfect gift.
How do you like it, Mrs. L?
I like it very well. Well, it's just what I need.
Well, thanks. How was the wedding, huh?
He's not married yet.
No. The groom got cold feet?
No, I
usually,
think...
as most husbands discover, it's the bride that has the cold feet, huh? I want to thank all you foot warmers out there. Now, Mr. McHugh, let's get back to you. As father of the bride, what are some of your expenses?
Well, I have to buy the trousseau for the bride and the food and all various other things.
Mm-hmm. You seem to be providing everything for the wedding.
Looks like.
Doesn't the groom's family supply anything?
Nothing more than the groom.
Well, that's certainly little enough, huh? You think that's fair, Mrs. Levine?
Well, yes, because the groom has to pay all expenses afterwards.
Yeah, but after the wedding, the bride's father has all the bills to pay while the groom's father has a room to rent, huh? Now let's play You Bet Your Wife. Let's play You Bet Your Life. In just 1 minute, you're going to work together as a team for $1,500. But right now, I want you to listen carefully to some interesting conversation.
Mary, what can I give Eleanor Blake for Christmas? She has everything. She may have everything, but her bedroom hasn't. Of course. She needs a dresser set. You've given me a wonderful idea.
And dresser sets are the decorator touch every bedroom needs today. Elgin American dresser sets for the most beauty, most value. They're exquisitely styled, engraved, and finished. Precision made to the last nylon bristle. Extremely value priced. Comb, brush, and mirror from just $14.95. From $7.95 for Elgin American's companion line of American Beauty dresser sets. So bring your bedroom, your guest room, up to the minute. Buy Elgin American dresser sets tomorrow. And buy them for the important, impressive gifts they make. Just make sure they are first in fashion, first in value. Elgin American dresser sets.
Then let's see how well you two will do in the quiz. Fenneman, tell them how you play You Bet Your Life.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected questions on famous hotels?
That's right.
Here's your first question. How much of the $20 will you go for?
How about five? Should we bet five?
Five? In what city do you find the Terrace Plaza Hotel?
Los Angeles.
One answer between you. Take a guess. I'm sorry, the bell is tolled. It's Cincinnati.
They now have $15.
You now have $15. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the 15 are you going to try?
I'll try 10 this time.
In what city do you find the Palmer House Hotel?
Chicago.
Chicago is right.
Now they're on their way. They have $25.
Now you've got $25. Here's your third question. How much of the 25 will you try?
$20.
In what city do you find the Sherry Netherlands Hotel?
New York
is right. The little lady is right.
They're climbing now. They have $45.
Give the little lady $45. Here's your last chance. I tell you what I'm going to do. Here's your last chance to beat the other couple. How much of the 45 are you going to try?
45.
In what city do you find the Roney Plaza Hotel?
San Francisco?
No, I'm sorry. It's Miami Beach.
Sorry.
Well, I'm really amazed. I thought when you came up here, you'd walk off with a lot of money. I'm going to give you one more chance to get rich quick. Answer this question correctly, and I'll hand over $10 in cash. And remember, no help in the audience, please. Who is buried in Grant's tomb? Grant is right. Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compacts. Don't go away now. You're still in the running for the big question. Fenneman, who's next in the docket?
A butcher and a housewife, Groucho. They don't know the secret word is sky. Our housewife is Mrs. Helen Hall, and our butcher is Mr. Jack Jeffries. And here they come. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to You Bet Your Life. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins a 16-millimeter Apollo Sound movie projector instantly. It's a common word, something you see every day. A butcher and a housewife, eh? Mr. Jeffries, then. Eh? Where do you do your butchering, Mr. Jeffries?
Ralph's Market.
And where are you from? Frankfort?
Arkansas.
And where are you from, Mrs. Hall?
Do you mean originally?
Let's forget our ancestors swinging in the trees. Eh? just tell me where you were born, Helen. I'll call you Helen, huh?
Okay.
I was born in Kalamazoo,
Michigan.
And you, Jack Jeffries, you're not related to Jim Jeffries, eh?
Oh, distantly.
You are. Tell me, Soup Bone, how long have you been butchering meat?
About 5 years.
Mm-hmm. 5 years. Now, there's always something I want to know about butchers. How can you tell the weight of meat? For example, a customer says, give me a pound of ground round, and you scoop up a slab, and it always comes out a pound. Why is that? Do you go by rule of thumb?
Well, after handling meat for so long a time, you know, you begin to get kind of come second nature. You can pretty near pick up a pound and...
But you admit there's a small margin of error, huh?
Well, very small.
Mm-hmm. Just enough to buy a Cadillac at the end of the year? Now, tell me, lamb chops, what is the busiest time of the year for you, huh?
Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Well, you're busy right about now, then.
Yes, sir.
How much are turkeys this year?
52 cents undressed, 59 dressed.
What do you dress him in, mink? What size turkey do you consider the best?
Well, I think a bird about 15-pound bird is the best eating bird.
I'm not interested in how he eats. I mean, how does he taste? That's what I want to know. How long have you been married, Helen?
Well, I've been married 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't have to be belligerent about it. What does your husband do?
He's doing secret work for the Navy.
How'd you meet him, Helen?
Well, Groucho, I was going to a surprise party to a gang of girls. So I went out and bought me the most beautiful black chiffon dress that you ever saw. Quite long and full. And
you look quite long and full, huh?
No, the dress was.
Oh, you were short and empty, huh? Yes.
And then the day of the party, it looked almost like rain. And so
what
I,
did the party?
The day.
Oh, the day looked
it
like
rain. You know, I looked out into the sky, and it was quite...
You said sky, Helen, and that's the secret word. George, tell her what she wins.
A 16-millimeter Apollo sound movie projector. Now you can show regular Hollywood sound movies or movies you take yourself, and it sells for $129.50.
Now, what were we talking about when the sky
fell
on me?
Well, I was talking about the sky.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right.
And then I started up the street, and I had to go about 4 blocks to a bus line. And then the rain came down. It just came down in all directions.
They don't do that, you know.
Sure, but you don't know what happened to my nice new dress. My dress kept creeping up and up until you know what, chiffon, when it gets wet.
Oh, yes, I have trouble with it all the time.
Well, it wads up into a ball, and so it just kept creeping up, and it kept creeping up.
And where was the bus driver? Huh?
I had this great big mammoth umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so I was keeping it in front of me, and then pretty soon there was a car drove up, and some man stuck his head out of the door, and he says, "Well, lady," he said, "would you like to have a ride?"
Uh-huh. Well, when is the next installment of this, huh? I'll have to wait a week for that.
Well, could I tell the rest of it? I spread the umbrella the best I could over my lap when I got into the car, and so he drove me home. And while I was changing my clothes and put something dry, why, he and my mother had a cup of tea and a cup, you know, and some cake.
Yeah.
And so they got acquainted. And so, I don't know, just somehow or rather we got married.
And that fellow's not your father?
No,
what about you?
Well, Groucho, he's my husband now. We got married in about 6 months.
I see. Well, that turned out very well, I suppose. Well, you make a charming couple, and we have the perfect gift from our sponsor. George, would you mind doing the honors?
For Mrs. Hall, pearls. The finest simulated pearls at any price. Elgin American pearls.
They're beautiful, and thank you.
And for Mr. Jeffries, the perfect gift for any man. Elgin American's popular cigarette case with today's smart leather-like look.
Okay, now let's play You Bet Your Life for $1,500. You're on your 20 bucks into more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question later. Fenneman's offstage. Remind our listeners how much the first couple won. Tell them, George.
The father of the bride and the mother of the groom lost all their money, so these people have a clear field.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected mountains west of the Mississippi. Is that right?
That's right.
Here's your first question. How much will you bet?
Ten?
Ten? All right.
All right. In what state do you find Mount Whitney?
California.
California is right, huh?
Well, we're off to a good start. They have $30, Groucho.
How much of your $30 will you bet?
20?
Okay.
In what state is Liberty Gap Mountain? Liberty Gap Mountain. You know. Sounds like double tone. You know. Liberty Gap Mountain.
You know? Tennessee.
Take a guess. Take a guess.
No,
no. I'm sorry. It's
right.
Washington.
That's right.
It's Washington. That's a tough one, though.
They now have $10.
You now have $10. Here's your third question. You have $10 left. Now, how much are you going to bet?
Oh, I'm going to make it last. You got one more question.
Come on, yes, you have another question there.
Five.
Five.
All right, in what state is Pikes Peak?
Colorado.
Yeah.
Colorado is correct.
And they're on their way again with $15.
All right, you're rolling along. You got $15. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 15 you going to go for?
Bet it all.
All right, all of it.
You're going to bet it all. In what state is Mount Palomar?
California.
California!
And they wind up with a grand total of $30.
Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compacts. Now, in just 1 minute, our last couple will play You Bet Your Life, and then we know it gets the $1,500 question. But at the moment, I'd like you to listen to this.
Sterling silver, gleaming gold, jewel of bronze are used, I'm told, in making compacts of such fame, they bear the Elgin American name.
They must be very expensive if they're made of such wonderful material.
They look expensive, we'll admit, but looks are not the half of it. Precision crafted, value packed at any price, the best compact. Beautifully styled, superbly finished, yet the price is so diminished.
Well, how much are Elgin American compacts?
As little as $3.95. And for the thriftiest man alive who wants a compact for his cutie, there's the companion line of American Beauty. $2.95 is all for these, so if you want your gift to please, say Elgin American when you buy. Now Groucho's waiting, so I must fly.
Now then, we'll soon know who's going to earn the most money and get the chance at the $1,500 question. George, who's leading so far?
Well, the butcher and the housewife are leading with $30. Our final couple is about to come in from their waiting room offstage. They don't know the secret word is sky. We invited some bail bondsmen and some process service to the show tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected bondsman Frank DeBolio and process server Robert Berge. And here they are. Gentlemen, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for Elgin American Compact. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins a 16-millimeter Apollo Sound movie projector. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mr., you're a bail bondsman?
That's right, sir.
Where are you from? Green Bale, Wisconsin?
No, New York City.
Are you married, or aren't you interested in the bonds of matrimony?
No, I'm married.
How'd you meet your wife, Mr. DeBellew?
Well, I dropped
in. Did she jump bail and land on your lap?
Not quite. I went into a drugstore one day, ordered a Coke, and reached in my pocket, and I didn't have a nickel. Fortunately, she happened to be sitting next to me, so I struck up an acquaintance, you know, and borrowed a nickel, and so I married her.
Wouldn't have been cheaper to give her the nickel back, huh?
Frankly, I think she's still trying to get it back.
Now, Tommy, can opener, that's you. As a bail bondsman, just what do you do?
Oh, I make the acquaintance of various people and ascertain what their moral characteristics are like and if they are financially responsible and try to give them bail if they can't put up cash for themselves.
How much does it cost for one of your bonds?
Oh, as for an example, a $1,000 bond would cost $100.
I can get a $1,000 bond for $100?
Mm-hmm.
Does the Treasury Department know about that? How do you know if a man is a good risk? How can you tell he's not going to skip the country after you fish him out on bail?
I talk to him and try to ascertain whether he's of good moral character.
Suppose he's just blown the safe down at the bank. Do you spring him if he happens to have a kind face?
No. We try to ascertain what his financial condition is. Mm-hmm.
Depends on how much of the bank's cash he got away with. How do you find what his financial position is?
Well, we ask him a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, suppose I was in the Bastille because they caught me in a washroom using one of those paper towels which I blotted instead of rubbed. Now, you're going to go my bail. What do you want to know? I have a kind face. Now, go ahead, huh?
Well, I'd look at you through the bars, and I would probably say,
aren't you a little premature?
So you'd be in jail. I'd be on the outside. I'd ask you, well, what's your booking name?
George Fenneman. That's an alias, I guess.
Well, now, what's your true name?
My true name? Margaret Truman, huh?
Tell me, do you have any visible means of support?
A girdle, but I hope it isn't visible.
No.
Well, how about it? Do I get out of this flea trap?
I'm sorry. You don't look responsible. You're liable to skip.
Flattery will get you nowhere. That's the nicest thing that's been said to me in weeks, huh? Now, a process server, Mr. Berg, in your job, just what do you do?
Serve summons, complaints, and subpoenas.
When is the best time to serve your papers? At night, when the victim is sound asleep?
Best time to serve is at dinner time.
I see. While the victim is saving cold cuts, you hand out hot subpoenas. Is that it? What is a subpoena? As if I didn't have one in my back pocket.
Subpoena is an order to appear in court and give testimony, testify, either for the defendant or the plaintiff.
Mm-hmm. And who do you work for?
I work for the Golden State Process Service.
How much do you get for this kind of work?
We get $1.50 for city service and $2.50 for county plus mileage.
Mm-hmm. And how much do you get for mileage?
7 cents a mile.
That's where you make your real dough, huh? How much would you charge to save a summons at my house?
Where do you live?
You know where the Burma Road is? You turn left there and go to Hong Kong. And it's the third Burma shave on the left. Well, we're happy. We're delighted to have you two as our guests tonight. And in return, we have some lovely gifts from our sponsor.
For the bail bondsman, Elgin American's exclusive heart-shaped compact that's definitely different. Something your wife will truly appreciate. It's jeweler's bronze that looks like gold.
Well, thank you very much. And on behalf of my wife, we appreciate this. Thank you.
For the process server, here's an ideal gift for you. An Elgin American cigarette case with today's smart new leather-like look.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's play You Bet Your Life for $1,500. Run your $20 into more than the other couples, and you get a chance at the big question later. And I can't tell you how much they won, but George has gone off stage to remind our listeners.
The butcher and the housewife are ahead with $30.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected foreign monetary units as your category.
That's right.
Now, you have $20. Now, how much are you going to try?
$10.
$10. That's... Here's your first question. You're going to bet $10. What is the monetary unit of Mexico?
The peso.
The peso is right, huh?
They're on their way. They have $30.
Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. How much of your $30 will you bet?
25.
Talk right up.
25.
25. 25. What is the monetary unit of the Netherlands? That's a tough one.
It's based upon the English pound.
Nothing is based on the English pound anymore. I'm sorry, it's the Gilder, G-U-I-L-D-E-R.
They now have $5.
You now have $5. Now, here's your third question. How much of the five are you going to try?
Try four.
Try four. All right.
Try four. All right. What is the monetary unit of Japan?
The yen.
The yen is correct.
Now they have $9.
All right. You've climbed up to Mount McKinley. You've got $9. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the nine are you going to risk?
Nine.
Okay. What is the monetary unit of Canada?
Canadian dollar.
The Canadian dollar is right, huh?
And they wind up with $18.
You wound up with $18.
But that means that the butcher and the housewife with $30 get the chance at the $1,500 question.
The name Elgin American means the very finest quality, designing, finish, and craftsmanship. The best value. In exquisite compacts, gorgeous simulated pearls, magnificent dresser sets, magic action lighters, wondrous lighter cases, distinguished cigarette cases, handsome military sets, fascinating musical humidors. Your favorite store has a complete assortment of the newest Elgin American styles right now. See them. And for your own proud use, for thrilling prestige gifts, always buy Elgin American.
And here's the winning couple, Groucho, the butcher and the housewife.
Back again to try for $1,500, eh? Good luck. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so talk it over thoroughly. And please, no help from the audience. Who is the head of government in Yugoslavia? He is now under fire by Russia. And what is the answer you two have decided upon?
We think it's Tito.
Marshal Tito is right. That's right. You win $1,500. Now, what are you going to do with the money?
I know one thing I need very much, and it's a new...
Umbrella.
Gas range.
A gas range, huh?
That's one thing I need.
And what are you going to buy?
Well, I'm going to...
Want to give us some meat for a gas range, huh?
Could be.
Yes, you could.
No, I'm going to try to help my youngster through college. He's going to school in San Francisco on the GI Bill. Thank
you very much. You couldn't give the money for a better purpose. You received those lovely gifts from Elgin American. You won $30 plus $1,500. You won $1,530. Congratulations to both of you.
The Elgin American Show, You'll Bet Your Life, is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Remember, next week's big question pays $1,000. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for You'll Bet Your Life, starring Groucho Marx, presented by the creators of America's most beautiful compacts, smartest cigarette cases, magic action lighters, and finest dresser sets, Elgin American.
Good night, folks. Have you looked at your compact lately? And don't miss Bing Crosby. He's next, you know. Good night.
In machines, fishes waving an angry fist. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's old-time radio. Now enjoy this episode of X-1, entitled Dwellers in Silence.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Ray Bradbury's Dwellers in Silence. Twenty years since the last of the giant migration ships had crashed to the surface of Mars, bearing its pitiful handful of survivors of the Earth Wars. 20 years of longing, of turning eyes toward the green Earth as it hung on the horizon like a beckoning light. And now it was done. And the first new ship, built of shining Martian chromaton, had lifted bravely toward home with 3 men locked in its metal belly.
There it is. You can barely see the top of the Atomic Trades Building in the twilight. They never finished building.
Captain.
What is it?
Am I going out of my mind? Look, out that way, to the west.
Could that be?
My heaven, it is. Those are lights. Turn the ship. Full cruising speed.
They are lights. Captain, it's a city, a whole blasted city lit up like a Christmas tree. What do you think of your dead planet now, Williams?
Decelerate to -5. We're going to take her down.
Unbelievable. We've been walking for hours now and not a soul to be seen.
There must be someone. How do you explain the lights?
Unless they've been burning like this for 20 years.
Impossible.
I don't know.
Municipal building.
Should we have a look here, sir? Possibly the records might contain some.
That's a good idea. Keep your weapons ready. We'll start right here with the city clerk's office. Better check radiation again, doctor.
Well, not enough to do any damage.
You the creeps, doesn't it? Look at this desk. Papers crumpled, inkstand, just as if somebody came in and worked here every day. Dog licenses, hunting permits.
That's strange.
Hmm?
There's ink in that inkstand.
Well, what of it?
Well, you'd think standing open for 20 years, it would have dried up. Good heavens.
If I hadn't heard it with my own ears, Evans, did that phone ring?
Yes. Well?
Pick it up, doctor.
Hello?
Good day, Doctor. How are you? I called to ask some advice about a trepanning problem. Can you tell me if the lateral cut should be made first?
Hello? This is absolutely insane. Hello?
Thank you, Doctor. I'll do that. By the way, how is your wife, Alice? And the girls? And your son, John? Fine boy, John. I'll call again tomorrow. Goodbye, Doctor.
Hello? Gone dead.
Who was it?
I don't know. Strange voice carried on a conversation about some surgical operation without paying the slightest attention to anything I said. Captain.
What is it?
Listen. Someone is coming, walking slowly toward the corridor.
Coming closer.
Jumping Jupiter. It's a man. An old man.
Is it really someone? You seem to be real. I saw the ship come down, and I thought perhaps I was losing my mind. It's been so many years.
I'm Captain John Parsons. These are my assistants, Dr. Evans and Mr. Williams. We returned to Earth from Mars.
Then it's happened. When we're not alone anymore. Forgive me, gentlemen, if I seem moved. I've waited and hoped for so long.
You survived the radiation.
We did.
There are others.
My family. We are the only ones.
I answered the phone a moment ago. Who was it?
You heard my voice, Doctor.
Yours?
Yes. To break the loneliness. I've recorded my voice and rigged up an automatic telephone. It's pleasant to hear the phone ring. I come here to work.
I take it you are a medical man.
My name is Cornelius Hathaway.
Hathaway? Hathaway, the brain surgeon?
You know my name.
Who doesn't? I watched you on television at college. Why, I saw you 23 years ago. You performed a difficult surgery for a cerebral tumor.
Thank you. I'd almost forgotten. My mind, you see, I'm almost 80 now.
Well, you look fine, sir.
We've had the best of everything. An entire city to choose from. Cold storage, the best equipment. But come. There's a fine dinner waiting for you, and you want to meet my family. When I saw the ship come down, I told Alice, my wife, you know, to prepare a feast. This is a great day for me, gentlemen. A great, great day. Alice, come out to the porch and see who we have here. Alice, you here? Come out. My wife, gentlemen. Alice, Captain Parsons, Dr. Evans, Mr. Williams.
How do you do?
And now, if you will follow me in, gentlemen, we'll meet my children.
Lord, what a beautiful woman. She looks no more than 35. Do you suppose the radiation could have done that to her?
I don't know.
And these are my daughters, Susan and Marguerite, and my son, John.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
Sit down, gentlemen, sit down. We'll have a feast in honor of this occasion. Susan, Marguerite, get the best silverware and the damask napkins. And John, fetch the champagne.
Yes, Father. Excuse me a moment, John.
Sir?
How old are you?
23, sir.
Thank you. What is it, Captain? Something wrong?
Nothing. Except that it's impossible. You see, Dr. Hathaway's son was already in college when I started. That would make him at least 45.
That was a wonderful meal, Mrs. Hathaway. Doctor, your wife is an exceptional woman.
Thank you, sir.
How would you gentlemen like some fresh gingerbread with your coffee?
I've baked
it this morning.
Oh, wonderful. Smell that, Doctor.
It's like coming home, Mrs. Hathaway.
It's like home having you here.
Mrs. Hathaway, may I compliment you on having preserved your youth and beauty so well?
Thank you. We have no worries here. No competition. All the things we need for material comfort.
Parsons and I were wondering, Dr. Hathaway, if the radioactivity had any effect in preserving tissue. Your children all look so young, too.
It is possible, gentlemen, of course. Radiation does strange things to living tissue. Alice, could we have some champagne? Alice.
Oh, I'm sorry. If what, John?
Some champagne, please.
Champagne? Oh, yes, of course.
An amazing woman. Did you ever see such grace, such complete relaxation?
It doesn't seem quite natural.
I beg your pardon, gentlemen?
Captain Parsons was just about to ask how you and your family managed to escape, Dr. Hathaway.
We were very fortunate. You see, my home was in the Sierra Mountains at the time. I had a lead-lined laboratory in the basement where I did X-ray research. My hobby, you know. I chose this house because it was on a hill where I could watch the sky. Oh, the loneliness of those first years.
But at least you had your wife and children.
Yes, I had my family. If it were not for them, gentlemen, I assure you, I would long ago have put a bullet in my head.
Champagne, Captain?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Hathaway. May I propose a toast?
Oh, let me. Gentlemen, to Earth.
To Earth?
Earth. May she never be stranger to man.
Hathaway, what is it? Are you all right?
It's nothing.
It's nothing really. Just a rather sharp pain in the chest. Why don't you gentlemen go out on the porch and enjoy the air? You've had a long and tiring journey. Alice will show you the way.
Will you be all right, John?
Yes, don't trouble yourself. I'll see you all in the morning.
Good night, Doctor.
Good night. Come, John.
Yes, Father. Well, what do you think of old Mother Earth now, Williams? Ah, smell that summer breeze. Look at that view of the city lighted up against the sky.
It has a certain quality.
Well, score 1 point for the back-to-earth proponents.
I didn't say that.
You're beginning to feel it, though, Williams, I can tell.
If you don't mind, gentlemen, I'm quite tired. I think I'll turn in. Excuse me?
Well, Captain?
Well, what?
What do you make of all this?
I don't know what you mean.
Miss Hathaway and his family. There's something strange and unnatural going on here. I can sense it.
Oh, I think you're reading things into it, Doctor.
Perhaps. Well, I'll turn in, too. Coming?
In a moment. I want to smoke a cigarette.
It's a very beautiful view, is it not?
Oh, I didn't hear you come out. How is he?
Resting. I've never seen him this bad.
Yes, he's an old man. I'm sorry, but the difference in your ages is so apparent. You must have been married very young.
You don't know about us, then?
No.
Perhaps it is better that way.
I don't follow you. Is it something about your husband? He acts very strangely.
My husband is a very great man, Captain. It is too bad there was no one to appreciate him. Once he wired the whole city with sound speakers. And when he pressed a button, the whole town lit up and made noises as if 10,000 people were living in it.
He must have been very lonesome. Although, with a woman such as you, I don't understand.
Perhaps one day you will understand.
I hope you will come to trust me as a friend.
I can trust no one but him. Good night, Captain.
Good night, Mrs. Hathaway.
Captain. Captain Parsons.
What are you doing? Who's there?
Dr. Evans.
Oh, what's wrong? What time is it anyway?
2 a.m.
What's wrong?
I couldn't sleep. A few minutes ago, I heard someone slip out the front door. In the moonlight, I saw it was the old man. He was headed toward the ship.
What are you suggesting, Doctor?
Nothing, except that it's fairly unnatural for an old man with a bad heart to go wandering off at 2 in the morning.
Very well. We'll follow him. This is far enough.
What do you suppose he's doing? What are those on the ground?
Good Lord, those are grave markers. 4 of them.
You're right. He seems to be praying over them.
Listen.
Do you forgive me for what I have done? I had to do it. I was so lonely. So terribly lonely. You don't mind too much. You do forgive me, don't you? Yes. Yes, I feel you do. Well, I'm glad. I think perhaps I can rest now. I think I...
Oh. He's having another attack. Come on. Hathaway. Dr. Hathaway, can you hear me? Raise his head, Evans. Dr. Hathaway.
His lips are moving.
What is it, Doctor?
Closer. Lean closer. I'm sorry I had to spoil all of this. I've expected it for some time.
We'll fix you up.
No. No, I'm an excellent diagnostician. It really doesn't matter. Except for them.
What about them, Hathaway?
You suspected, didn't you?
Yes, I suspected. But I couldn't believe it until now. Do they know?
No. No, they wouldn't understand. I wouldn't want them to know. Ever.
Doctor?
He's dead, Captain. What was it he meant about your suspecting?
Light a match, Dr. Evans. Look on those four grave markers and tell me what you see.
Good heavens.
Well?
Alice Hathaway, Marguerite Hathaway, Susan Hathaway, John Hathaway. Died July 1987. But that's 20 years ago. It's impossible. If these markers are correct, then who are those others?
Can't you guess, Doctor? Can't you guess? I'm sorry, Mrs. Hathaway.
He didn't want us to feel badly. He told us it would happen one day and that he didn't want us to cry. He didn't teach us how, you know. He said it was the worst thing that could happen, to know how to be lonely and unhappy. We weren't to know what death is.
Perhaps it's just as well.
You know about us, don't you?
Yes, I know. I didn't think you knew yourself.
The children don't. I have been aware for a long while.
No one would have guessed. You're so perfect.
He would have liked to hear you say that. He was so very proud of us. After a while, he came to love us, and at the end he took us as his real wife and children. He even forgot sometimes that he had made us.
You gave him a great deal of comfort.
Yes. Over the years we sat and talked. He loved so much to talk. I was first, you know. Then he became lonesome for the children, and so he made them. There was only one thing. One flaw.
And that?
He couldn't make us grow old. And so he had to watch himself become an old, old man. While we stayed young. It was a great blow to him.
We'll bury him on the hillside where the other four crosses are. I think he would like that.
Yes, he would.
Mrs. Hathaway, Alice, I think that you are a very great and wonderful woman. And so we commend the body of this man, John Hathaway, to his maker. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust returneth. Amen.
Come, John.
Yes, Mother.
Susan, Marguerite.
Evans, Williams, stay here a moment, please.
What is it?
Let them go back to the house. I want to speak to you.
I know what you're going to tell us, Captain. I saw the names on the grave markers.
Well?
It's a mockery, a blasphemy of everything we believe in. For a man to do something so evil.
Can't you imagine what he faced? Can't you imagine what it must have been like to have watched his wife and children die slowly of radiation burns? To know that he was the last man on the face of the earth. Alone. Eternally and unalterably alone. Good Lord, man. What would you have done if you'd had his medical and technical genius? I'll tell you. You'd have come back to your laboratory just as he did and tried to recapture all the wonderful things that they had been to you. You'd use all the power of your memory, all the accuracy of your fingers, and you'd try to put together, bit by bit, all those things that were wife, son, and daughter.
It's incredible.
So you suggest that we take them back, Captain? I don't know. We haven't enough space in the ship for that. Every ounce counts. Still, to leave them here like that, alone.
I think I have an answer, cold-blooded as it may seem.
Go on.
I suggest that we turn them off.
Do you think I could do that?
No, but I think I could. After all, they aren't human. They're worse than robots. They're ghoulish. I suggest you go back to the ship, Captain, and leave me to deal with them.
I will not permit it.
You've no choice in the matter. I assure you, it'll be quick and entirely painless.
I hate to admit it, but he's right, Captain. We can't take them with us, and it would be less than human to leave them here without Hathaway. They were created by him for himself. They have no other feelings, no other purpose. If you leave them, they'll go on year after year, night after night, talking, laughing, baking strawberry biscuits for no reason, not knowing who they are, why they exist.
Could you do it, Doctor?
I don't know.
I've already offered to do it.
No. No, I wouldn't want it to be you, Williams. You're sick. You have no feeling. If Dr. Evans here can do it, well, so be it.
It's a difficult thing, Captain.
Still, as you say, they aren't human. Logic is on your side. It, It isn't as if you were murdering someone. Well?
Give me the blast gun, William.
We'll wait in the ship. Take off in half an hour.
Half an hour.
$6.25. You should be back soon.
Yes.
He's doing the only humane thing, Captain. They're less than human.
Are they?
Well, it's done now. No one will ever... That's the airlock. He's back.
Well, here's your gun.
Did you do it?
When I entered the house, one of the daughters looked up at me, and she smiled. The others smiled. He taught them that, taught them to make him feel welcome when he came home at night. I knew that, and yet... Well, I should have done it then. I might have, but she came in. The wife. She said something about sitting down for a cup of tea. She looked at me with those fine, intelligent eyes. I couldn't do it. It would be murder. Cold-blooded murder.
I prayed you wouldn't be able to do it. There will never be anything as fine as they are, you know. Built to last 100, 200, perhaps 1,000 years. Well, get the course in the integrator, Williams. We'll take off in 20 minutes. I should be back by then.
You're going out, sir?
I'm going to say goodbye.
You've come back.
Only to say goodbye.
It was nice of you.
I wanted you to know that I'm coming back.
Here? To us?
Here. To you.
I believe you.
I never meant anything more.
When will you come?
I don't know. It'll take many years to prepare fuel for another trip. 6, 7, perhaps 10 years.
I will watch the sky at night, just as he watched it.
I'm not a young man.
Time is nothing to me. I was born out of time.
I'm afraid I must go now.
I understand. Strange. I have a new feeling. One which he didn't teach us. A feeling of longing. Of sadness.
That one is not taught. It comes of being alive.
Yes, I am alive. Even though he created me, I'm a person now.
Goodbye, Alice Hathaway.
Goodbye, John Parsons.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Dwellers in Silence, written by Ray Bradbury and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Anne Seymour, Carl Weber, Theodore Osborne, Richard Hamilton, Edwin Jerome, and Stan Early. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Next week, X-1 will be heard on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report. Thank you.